Guaranteed Fans!
Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we are watching episode 4 of the original 1985 Saturday morning TV show, The Berenstain Bears, as featured on Saturday morning TV. There's two familiar stories in this episode. We have the Berenstain Bears and the neighborly skunk, and we have the Berenstain Bears and the missing pumpkin. It's not a spooky episode or anything, but it is a mystery, I guess. And they're both based on pre-existing stories. Neighborly Skunk, which is based on a very small premium paperback that was released as like, it was like Papa for President, that whole series, The Soccer Star, the ones I think you got at McDonald's or something, Chick-fil-A or someplace like that. I have covered it years ago. I think it was in the first year of this podcast existing, I covered the Neighborly Skunk. But then they based a TV episode off of it. And also, the Berenstain Bears and the Missing Pumpkin was based on a Bear Detectives book. One of the first Bear Detectives books, if I remember correctly, where brother and sister and Freddie would go around with their dog Snuff and Papa would follow them and try to help them solve mysteries. Old school Berenstain Bears storytelling that we are going to take a look at and see how well it translated to the animated medium, the world of ink and paint, the colorful cells of live action, live animation, as pioneered by such luminaries as Ub Iwerks and Walter Lantz. So that's it. We're going to take a look. We'll get the original introduction on Saturday morning television of a very well-beloved Berenstain Bears character. So hold on to your hoods, your hangnails, hold on to your humps, and we're going to watch these episodes. So are you ready to join me on a magical adventure? I guess. Here we go. And doodly doodly doodly, we're back. And so we watched the Berenstain Bears and the Neighborly Skunk and the Berenstain Bears and the Missing Pumpkin. Ooh, was not scary. However, the Berenstain Bears and the Neighborly Skunk was an interesting, fascinating episode. As fascinating as the book was when I first covered it. What's amazing about the Neighborly Skunk is it begins the flawed attempt to compare races or cultures and different animals, using animals as a stand-in for different cultures and different races, so that we can play around with the concept of prejudicial thought, bigotry, assumptions we make about people, and so on. But as I've said many times, not just on this show, but in other places, I mean, mostly muttering to myself, never works. It's never really works. Whether you're talking X-Men using the mutants as some sort of like oppressed underclass, whether you're talking Zootopia, which uses predators versus prey as like the class division, with predators strangely becoming like the underclass, the discriminated against class. Whether you're talking about that Will Smith movie Bright, where like fantasy creatures existed in this world and they immediately became second class citizens or whatever, orcs were discriminated against. No matter which one of those types of things, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where the Toons are the second class citizens, no matter what version of that you're discussing, it never really holds water. And that's because it's a fundamentally flawed comparison, because whether you're talking animals or mythical creatures, magical creatures, or mutants, they are the idea behind prejudice is that people are people. And deep down, we're all pretty much just flesh and blood. And we have our own histories and our own personalities. We have our own cultures. We have our own we have many differences. We have many similarities. But we all have emotions. We all cut when we all bleed when cut, as the play told us. And so, like at the end of the day, you should, as the great doctor himself said, you should judge people by their actions, not the color of their skin, but the content of their character. Like judge people based on what they do, if you have to judge them at all. But the problem is the X-Men have superpowers. The X-Men are a existential threat on many different levels. Like the X-Men are actually dangerous. Like there is a there is a danger with the guy who can blow you up with his eyes, or the guy who can read your mind, or the guy who can make all metal, or the person who can suck the life out of you simply by touching your skin. Like, that is a credible threat. And I believe they should be treated as people. They are people. They are humans. They deserve the benefit of the doubt. But it's not a one-to-one. It's not like an oppressed class in the sense that the things being said about them. Oh, and there's also an entire brotherhood of evil mutants trying to take over the world using those powers. So, or in Zootopia, the predators are considered dangerous. Like, they could snap at any moment. And as we learn in the movie, they could snap at any moment. There's simply some sort of genetic inhibitor keeping them from it. But all they have to do is eat the wrong berry and they'll go nuts and start killing people. Like, that's a problem. The toons in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, there are fundamental differences between them and people. I don't believe they should be considered a second class, like lower class citizens. But they are functionally immortal beings with magical powers. Like, the toons are functionally magical creatures with a skewed sense of morality and a skewed idea of safety to human. Like, they don't understand what could accidentally kill us. So the toons are a potential threat. At least they don't fit in the same slot as human beings. They are another thing. They have their own beliefs, their own cultures. Physics work differently around them. They are a different thing. And so you can't sort of paint that one-to-one with oppressed human beings, because no matter who you're oppressing, no one has magical powers. No one is any more dangerous than anyone else, like at a biological level. We're all just people. So when it comes to the Berenstain Bears and the Neighborly Skunk, we immediately run into that problem, because Sister is learning a lesson at school about our neighbors and appreciating our neighbors. And there's a bunch of different animals on there. And she's like, I don't like porcupines. They can throw their quills at you. And Teacher Jane, speaking like a strange Bob's Burgers character, she's like, well, yes, Sister. Like, it sounds like a dude playing the teacher, like on Bob's Burgers, but it's clearly a woman, but she's doing such a weird voice. I'm like, why this for Teacher Jane? Like, it's a weird choice. Teacher Jane's like, don't believe everything you hear about other people. Porcupines are our neighbors. They do not throw their quills at you. That's a myth. And so we're like, okay, so this is about don't believe everything you hear about people who are different from you, which is a good lesson. Judge people as you meet them. But then what happens is there's a burrow near the bear's treehouse, and there's new neighbors. Like, people are, it's for sale. And first, a family of beavers looks in, and Papa's like, well, I'd love to have beavers move in next door. They're so relaxing with, like, their hard work. They're always busy. They're always doing stuff. They're great engineers, and I'd love to discuss engineering with them. And I'm like, well, first of all, when the beavers do move in a later book, Papa's like, I don't want the beavers moving in because they work too hard and they'll show me up. But in both situations, Papa's absolutely right. Beavers are good engineers, and they do work very hard. Like, that's not proven wrong. And then they don't end up moving in because they're too far away from a water source. So the rabbit family comes looking, and they have a ton of kids. And Sister's like, oh boy, if the rabbits move in, there'll be a lot of kids for me to play with. And I know that in the book, I believe Papa Bear is like, I don't want a bunch of rabbits moving in. They'll have too many kids. And this one, Sister's just excited about it. But no matter which side you're on, it's still true. The rabbits do have a lot of kids, and the father rabbit actually makes a comment about how, like, this burrow's too small, and we only have 7 kids, and we're planning on expanding soon. So if this wasn't about a family of bears, say, and there was a house off for sale next door, and a bunch of, I don't know, Catholics started looking at it, and the parent in the family was like, well, I don't want Catholics moving in next door. They have a bunch of kids. And then a family of Catholics looking at it is like, well, we only have 7 kids, so we're going to expand. You would be justified in being like, I don't want to read this book to my kids. It's a little like about Catholics. But this book is like, no, because they are rabbits, and rabbits do multiply pretty quickly. So of course they would be like, they, because they're not bears, because they're not, it's not a good lesson in prejudice, because you've prejudged these characters based on biological truths about rabbits. And so finally a skunk, the house sort of falls into disrepair. No one's buying it. A tree falls on it during a storm. And then it gets looked at by a skunk who says he's bought it cheap as a fixer-upper, but the tree falling on it has sort of put a damper on his plans, because he bought it as is, but that was before the tree fell on it. So the cubs are nervous about a skunk moving in because they're like, skunk smell. And Papa's like, P.U., skunk smell. And he puts like a clip on his nose. And Mama's like, he's still our neighbor and we got to treat him with respect. And of course, once they learn he's, you know, he needs help with this tree and refixing his house, the whole neighborhood pitches in. The beavers who live at the local beaver dam, there's some rabbits who come and help out, and the bear family helps. Papa moves the tree by himself, and they all become good friends. Meanwhile, there's this subplot with Too Tall and his gang represented here. This is the first appearance of television Too Tall, a bear who looks nothing like Too Tall in the books. It is a wild character redesign. A, he is twice as tall as the other cubs. He wears a t-shirt that shows off his giant belly, and he wears a baseball cap. Like, he wears a yellow top that with his belly hanging out, like a pair of pants and then a baseball cap. And then Scuzz, Smirk, and Vinny, who aren't named, are just three generic cubs. They look exactly the same. They wear different outfits, but they look exactly the same. One of them is Southern, which is really weird. He's like, oh, Too Tall. There's some pretty good gags. The script is written by Stan and Jan Barrett, saying pretty good gags. But Too Tall's been picking on brother and sister before school. In just great bullying fashion. Good old 80s bullying. And then at the end, they get picked on. They helped out Mr. Skunk. So Mr. Skunk shows up and sprays Too Tall and his friends. He's like, I have a strong disposition. And he's like, here comes my strength. And he squirts them with his juice. But that's the thing. So sorry about the whole juice comment. So that's the thing, though, is Papa and the cubs were like, skunk smell bad. And yeah, they can, because they are skunks. Like, skunks have the ability to smell terrible as a defense mechanism. And I think I said this when we covered the book in year one in 2015. The lesson also sort of seems to be, you should be nice to your neighbors because they might be able to help you out one day, which is kind of true. But also, you should just be nice to your neighbors, like whether or not they can help you out. But that was a neighborly skunk. Frank Welker does the voice of the skunk. It's very Frank Welker-y. A high-pitched Frank Welker-y voice, but it's still clearly Frank Welker. But we get introduced to Teacher Jane. We get introduced to Too Tall and his gang. We get introduced to the skunk. It's just a great, it's a solid app. And then it's followed up by The Berenstain Bears and the Missing Pumpkin, which is based on the Berenstain Bear detectives and the case of the missing pumpkin. And it pretty much follows the book. Farmer Ben has a prize winning pumpkin. We get a little more backstory on it. There's like an article in the paper about this giant pumpkin. He's very proud of the article. He wants to show Mrs. Ben, but his pumpkin is missing. The bear detectives over here. So brother and sister call on Cousin Fred. It's his first appearance in the show. Cousin Fred shows up. So does Snuff, his first appearance on the show. And they haul out their bear detective gear, which is on top of a giant, like a story and a half tall pile of trash in the barn. I don't know why it's up there or how they even got it up there, but they climb up to the top of the trash. They take their gear down and they go solve a mystery. And it does follow the book pretty much beat for beat. Papa overhears that they're going to try to find this missing pumpkin. He thinks he's the expert, and he leads them into shenanigans with a bull that chases them through a field, this, that, and the other thing. He ends up crashing into he falls into the pig slop. He thinks there's a lot of like thieves in the barn, but it's actually the chickens, and he ends up in a mess there. And if you remember the book, it's Mrs. Ben, who we also meet in the episode, Mrs. Ben, actually took the pumpkin and made it into pies. And at the very end, they all sit around at the table and eat pies, including the dog Snuff, who's the MVP of the episode because he makes great faces. He's just sort of there. He doesn't have any lines. He's the non-sentient animal. But they do feed the dog an entire pumpkin pie, which cannot be good for like that much. Pumpkin pie has a lot of dairy in it, and that much dairy in a dog is probably not going to be fun to be around later that evening. So just think about that. Don't feed your dogs that much pumpkin pie. But as I said, when I was watching the episode, I had a pretty good pumpkin pie this week. It was pretty good piece of pumpkin pie. And so I was watching this and I was like, normally I would be jealous. I'd be like, I'm hungry for pumpkin pie. But I wasn't, because I had good pumpkin pie this week. Just in case you were sitting at home this week or another and wondering if I had had good pumpkin pie, that's the answer. I have had good pumpkin pie this week. And then the episode ends. Two solid Eps. It's very close. The second one, the pumpkin one, was very close to the book. It did not have – the book is in rhyme, and it did not have the rhymes, but it did have it did have a few of the rhymes. just tossed in here and there, and I appreciated that because the episode was written by Roby, R-O-W-B-Y, Gorin. Roby, which I didn't even know was a name, Roby Gorin. Roby Gorin was a comedy writer. He was part of a team for Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. So here we have a connection between Laugh-In and the Berenstain Bears beyond the casting of Ruth Buzzy. Ruth Buzzy plays Mama, was a Laugh-In regular. But Roby Gorin, American writer, he worked on Laugh-In. He worked on animated series. He worked on Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. He wrote for He-Man, Berenstain Bears, Tiny Toons, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I assume the Wolf Productions, The Busy World of Richard Scarry, which makes sense. Paddington, Super Mario Brothers Super Show, Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, and various Sid and Marty Krofft projects. So this is a man. He's still alive, by the way. You look at his list and you're like, wow, just everything. If you ever found an episode funny of one of these shows, like legitimately funny, like with some good gags, there were some good visual gags in this episode. Roby Gorin may have had a hand in that. I just think it's interesting that like these people, he starts off as a comedy writer for very adult comedy, and then he writes for Hollywood Squares, Tony Orlando and Dawn, and then he gets hired on for the Crofts Superstar Hour. And that seems to be his into kid stuff. Because even though he does write for Three's Company a couple of times, we've got the Super Globetrotters, we've got the Little Rascals cartoon, Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. But, you know, like in the middle of all that, there's like an episode of Heart to Heart. I'm just like, yeah, okay, he's a comedy writer. How old is Roby Gorin? Like, what a great name. Like I was a little taken aback when I saw it, but now I'm a Roby fan. World famous comedy writer Roby Gorin at Roby.com, I guess, is his official website. Wow, look at this guy. I don't know. I guess he's still working. Yeah. Go to Roby, R-O-W-B-Y.com. It says on September 28th, there was an update. They're setting up a mailing list for his new comedy series. So check it out. He wrote a very good episode of the Berenstain Bears. Thank you, Roby. And hey, Roby, if you're listening, which I assume you are, and you want to guest on my podcast, just hit me up. Just hit me up at BerensteinBearCast.org and let me know. Let's see how many episodes of this show he wrote. 13. He's a writer on 13 episodes. This was his first one, so which is listed on IMDb as episode 10. So who knows? Who knows? But we got some interesting. Ooh, it looks like there's some. It looks like he specialized in mystery episodes. So I'd be curious to ask him how that all came about. And was it the Ruth Buzzy connection? So yeah, Roby.com. Roby Gorin. I've learned something new every day. That's why I love this show. So thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening, for watching, if you're watching this on YouTube. Thank you so much for putting up with my insanity. Thank you so much for putting up with everything that I demand of you. You just watch, listen, keep doing it. I've been doing this for so long now. I'm not even trying to build an audience anymore. They come to me. So keep on keeping on, and I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.